What up, what up, what up? Welcome to the Man of Steel podcast. I'm Michael Steele. You can find me on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you like to get your podcasts so you can hang out with the Man of Steel. You can also follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. Well, this week we're going to do a deep dive into crazy. That's all I can call it. After watching the President of the United States sit down at the Resolute desk with none other than Kanye, and what ensued from that was, well, let's just say, interesting. To help us sort of digest it and understand exactly what it means, I am so happy to welcome this brother to the mic, Juan Williams. He's an author and a political analyst for Fox News Channel. His latest book is What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights. You can follow him on Twitter at The Juan Williams. He's something else. It's great to have you with us, Juan. Welcome.
Well, I love your opening. What up, what up, what up, Michael Steele? You know, I love it. And I should tell the audience that not only is Michael Steele a man of steel, but he's a man of his word. You're a good man, Michael Steele. And I know, I've known you so long, so I've seen things happen. Yeah. And I've always admired Michael Steele.
Well, I appreciate that. That admiration is mutual, because I've been a big fan of yours, certainly going back to my days, even before my days at Fox, and your work over there. I think a lot of people have gotten to know your word is a word of bond as well. And you tell important stories, and you bring it to people in a real way. And I think that's why Juan William works for so many people. And you certainly work for me, and I'm glad you can be a part of this conversation. So help me understand what we witnessed between the president and Kanye West. I didn't get it. Maybe you did.
Well, I mean, I think it's very important to understand that Kanye West was there as a prop. I mean, you got to remember, and I think you'll appreciate this, Michael, the way that the meeting was staged did not have Kanye West sitting next to President Trump. It didn't have Kanye West standing next to President Trump. It didn't have Kanye West walking with President Trump or holding a press conference at, you know, parallel lecterns. No, he's seated on one side of the big oak desk, the Resolute desk, as you call it, and Trump's on the other, as if he's got a barricade. And then guess what? The cameras aren't focused on Trump or West. No, the TV cameras are on the side, and they're all focused on a huge number of photographers and reporters with their cell phone and microphones and recorders. This was all about staging a meeting between President Trump's number one black fan and the president. And I think the aim was to say to Trump's white supporters, who may be concerned about his reputation, 49% of people in a recent Fox poll said President Trump's a racist. Two-thirds of Americans tell pollsters race relations are worse, and they disapprove of Trump's handling of race relations. Trump always likes to say, oh yeah, but look at the unemployment rate, as if he was the one who pushed down black unemployment to 6%, a historic number, right, without mentioning it was down to 7% before he even came into office. So he's down one additional point, but that's it. So anyway, he brings in Kanye West, and my impression is he thought Kanye West was going to come in and it was going to be just fine. He's going to say a few words, take a few pictures. But Kanye West went on a 10-minute rant that, as you describe at the top of the podcast, was pure crazy.
And used
profanity. I mean, says that he likes Hillary Clinton, but Donald Trump is like a father figure for this fatherless boy. I mean, he's a man, this Kanye West, but now he's acting like he wants Donald Trump to be his daddy? How crazy was this?
I really get into a warped cycle here, because this is the same guy who referred to George Bush about, you know, as, you know, George Bush doesn't care about black people,
right,
to embracing a guy who has a demonstrated history of not really caring about black people as his father figure. I don't want to get into the man's particular psychological makeup. He talked about his own bipolar issues, which I thought, you know, well, yeah, that's a profound point to make, but that's not the right setting to make it. And it's certainly, given the way you've described it, which was accurate, you know, it's not the best image you want, you know, want to come out of that conversation in the Oval Office. But I don't get the transformation, the response from and among a lot of African Americans, beyond the head scratching is like, WTF, what the hell is your problem? You're not representing black people well right now. I agree with you. I think it really was a matter of the prop. And Kanye played that part very well. And it was reinforcing to white voters out there. See, this black guy likes me. I just find myself scratching my head and trying to figure out exactly what was the point beyond that moment. Did Trump lose control of it, do you think? I mean, was it just one of those things where the bipolarism kicked in and boom, all of a sudden you're in a whole different space and Trump, all he could do was sit there and smile?
Yeah, and at the end he said that was something. I mean, that's all he could do, because it was literally like a wave coming at you on the beach and, you know, a tornado just ripping over you. And he sat there and he was entertained by it, because it fit, again, the reality TV mode of his whole presidency. So why not let it go? Let it rip. He's got the desk between him and Kanye until Kanye got up and made the effort to come over and hug him. Trump didn't even stand up. So, I mean, it was so servile, submissive, and to my mind, misguided, Michael.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about it is, if you stop and you look, you say, you know what, Trump has all these issues with calling black NFL players protesting police brutality right. by kneeling during the anthem. He calls them SOBs. He says people coming from Africa, the Caribbean, Latin America, coming from S-hole countries. He was the man who created the birther movement. I go through so many of these issues in my book, What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Because in Trump's mind, everything starts right now. And what we heard from Kanye in his meeting in the Oval Office is, forget about what happened in the past. All we have is to live for today. As he wants to join Trump in erasing everything that Trump has done and said that's been insulting and condescending to black people. So I think Kanye West thinks, hey, I'm in the Oval Office. I can sell some records. Talk about a gold digger. That was as big as it. I think he looked like a gold digger.
Yeah, no, it did. And so you reference the book. And again, folks, the book is What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights. It's out now. It's a great read. And I want to quote from the book, quote, "Unsympathetic, ambiguous, and openly racist remarks are a hallmark of Donald Trump's public life. They may have reached their nadir after he failed to condemn white supremacy in the wake of the violence in Charlottesville. But perhaps no remark of his is more telling than his campaign pitch to African Americans. Quote, what the hell do you have to lose? End quote. Quite a lot, as it turns out. And the interesting thing about that passage from your book and that quote specifically was that every time the president has made that quote, used that quote, he's never used it or said it in front of black people. It's
right.
always been white audiences.
So this is what we were just talking about with the Kanye West visit to the Oval Office, that the real audience there were white people, potentially swing voters who have some qualms about Trump's relationship with minorities, the antagonism, the rudeness, and of course the complaint from people that, hey, Trump is pretty racist, because nobody likes that label. It's a very strong term. And yet, to my amazement, half of America says to pollsters, yeah, that guy, that's one right there, that's a racist. Well, that's amazing. But in both situations, what you see is that Trump is never talking to black people.
Right.
So even when Kanye is there, the audience is white Americans. When he first used the phrase, what the hell do you have to lose, he was not in the black community, not in the inner city, not even speaking, let's say, on a program directed to the black community. He was speaking at a Trump rally out in like this rural area
right.
of Michigan
right.
to
right.
an almost all white audience. And I think here's the message, Michael. The message was those people over there, and this is literally quoting him, they live in areas worse than Afghanistan. There's so much violence and shooting. There's no jobs. There's bad schools. So what the hell do you have to lose? Why do you guys vote for Democrats like Hillary Clinton instead of voting for me? That seemed to be what he was saying on the surface, but I think the deeper message was to the white audience, those people have dysfunction and madness and danger, and they'll come in and they'll send their kids to your school, or they'll mug you on the street. They'll make you feel unsafe when you go into town for dinner, and I'm the man to stand in the breach. I'm Donald Trump. I'm no snowflake. I'm not politically correct. I will say those people are out of control, and I will defend you, good white folks, against those people.
And that, to me, is the crux of it, because it's two parts to that that I find amazing that come together. The first is what you've just described as Trump's sort of mental approach to this, and how he then articulates that mental approach by playing that particular aspect of the race card, if you will. But then the other side of it is white folks buy this shit.
There's the Man of Steel.
I'm sitting there going, now wait a minute, you can't be that deaf, dumb, and stupid to sit there and think that because this man brings Kanye into the West Wing of the White House and lets him hug up on his ass, that now that should tell you that he's okay with black people? I mean, they cannot be that dumb.
But here's the thing. Not only are people that gullible and susceptible to distortion, and we've seen a lot of that from the president. I don't know if you caught his op-ed in the USA Today when he just told lie after lie about Obamacare and Medicare. It was crazy. I can't believe this is what's going on. But you got to remember that from Trump's perspective, why not? Because he feels like, you know what? I'm going to describe these people as a threat. I'm not going to focus on black people who are striving to get ahead, who get up and work hard every day, try to do right by their family. I'm going to focus on the 20% still locked in poverty, disproportionately young people who have disproportionate records of criminal offense or going to jail. And I'm going to say that's the entirety of America's black population. Much like he says that all the Latinos and all the immigrants belong to MS-13 and are trying to kill white people. Oh, look at these blacks, all of them out of control. Well, what an insult. Because I'm just going to cite one number. I don't want to bore you, Michael, but I'm just going to cite one number. 40% of black Americans earn between $35,000 and $100,000.
Yeah.
An additional 12% earn between $100,000 and $200,000. So more than 50-something percent are clearly in the middle class or beyond.
Yes.
What an incredible story of people who, despite discrimination, despite being unfairly treated, have strived to fulfill the American dream, believed in America. And yet Donald Trump wants to present black people as a threat to good white people because of welfare programs, entitlement spending, a threat in terms of crime. There's so much here, but it is so unbelievably crass, rude, and negative about people of it's divisive. It's intentionally racially divisive.
But this is why I still marvel in this day and age that white people can't be that stupid, because they know damn well, A, there are more of them than us. So by any measurement, they will be greater participants in and resource users of welfare programs than black people.
Right.
You know, there's a whole part of the country called Appalachia. Maybe some white folks who live in these nice suburban communities and some of these other parts of the country should get in their car and just sort of drive through there, okay? So they get a better sense of perspective, because this idea, and this is one of the things I got into with one of the Republican congressmen from Mississippi a couple of years ago, when he was, you know, referring to these, you know, welfare recipients and welfare programs, clearly referencing black people. And I tweet out, have you taken a look at your own district? First off, there aren't any black people in your district, number one. Number two, the majority of the welfare recipients in your district are white. So does that even clue in for you where we are? But yet Trump sort of masquerades around with this idea that this is what I love, and we'll play this quote from Kanye about Superman.
You know, they tried to scare me to not wear this hat, my own friends, but this hat, it gives me power in a way. You know, my dad and my mom separated, so I didn't have a lot of male energy in my home, and also I'm married to a family that, you know, not a lot of male energy going on. It's beautiful, though. But there's times where, you know, it's something about, you know, I love Hillary. I love everyone, right? But the campaign I'm with her just didn't make me feel as a guy that didn't get to see my dad all the time, like a guy that could play catch with his son. It was something about when I put this hat on, it made me feel like Superman. You made a Superman. That's my favorite superhero. And you made a Superman cape for me.
So here you've got Kanye talking to Donald Trump saying, you made a Superman cape for me. You made me the man my daddy, which I didn't have. Okay, that's true. My daddy wasn't there for many years because he was an alcoholic and he died when he was 36. My mom later remarried and I had a father figure in the house. Okay, fine. So that's a narrative. But that, dude, it's not a chip on the shoulder. It doesn't stop. It clearly didn't stop him from becoming a successful artist.
Nope.
And Donald Trump ain't have squat to do with that. So laying all of this at his feet as if some form of homage and thanking him, to me, just seemed, and I think that's why so many black folks are like, what the hell is this brother's problem?
Well, you know, and so here's the other part of this that, you know, you were talking about, are people that gullible? So I've had conversations with people since this in which they say, Kanye West is a free thinker. Why do all black people have to think alike? You know, Kanye West is his own. I'm like, wow. So this is how you want to reframe this?
Yes.
In order to say that something of substance. I've even had people say, oh, Kanye West got a concession from Trump in terms of stop and frisk. That's not true.
That's not true
what
at
concession?
All.
Oh, my gosh. But, you know, this idea, oh, all these black people think alike. Again, this fits in with Trump's approach. Again, for white people, about black people, which is they're not rational or smart enough to see their own best interest. That if they could see their own best interest, it would be to get on the Trump bandwagon. Remember Omarosa? When she was pro-Trump, she used to say, we need to all bow down to President Trump.
Yes,
I was like, what?
Right.
And then, of course, she turns on Trump. That's the kind of people he attracts. He doesn't attract Michael Steele.
No.
He doesn't attract Colin Powell. He doesn't even attract people like Tom Sowell or Condi Rice. No, no, no. Black conservatives
Omarosa
with some
and Kanye.
Policy experience aren't with Trump. No.
No.
Omarosa. Oh, Kanye West. Oh, my God.
I mean, and it's the reality TV nature of this presidency that I think is the most dangerous part of this because – as I say to my colleagues over at MSNBC, and we talk about this stuff, and I'm sure you probably have the same conversation with your colleagues over at Fox, although they probably listen a lot less than my colleagues do at MSNBC, is that, and then why it's so dangerous, because it dumbs down the conversation. Yesterday was another dumbing down. This meeting between Kanye and the president was another dumbing down of the conversation. It was sucking us into this reality TV presidential vortex where you get churned around and up is down and down is right and left is up and you have no idea where you are. Your orientation is thrown off. So then your whole perspective of what a presidency is, what a president is, what do you do in that space? I've resented from almost day one this sort of cavalcade of people hugging and standing around the Resolute desk like they're at some showplace arena, you know, doing a photo op. I mean, it just the you know, I'm thinking back to Reagan, who wouldn't take his coat off in the office.
Right. Oh, by the way, Michael, so let me just tell you what I've been hearing. Oh, so now you're concerned about decorum in the Oval Office. But what about you Democrats? Didn't you defend Bill Clinton when he was having sex in the Oval Office? I'm like, so that's the bar now?
That's the bar.
In other words, as long as you're not having sex, you can do anything in the
right.
Oval Office. But this is in keeping. They will defend Trump no matter what man does.
It doesn't matter. And that, again, for me is why this period is such a dangerous period for this country, because more and more people are sort of buying in this excuse-making mode where they're looking at things through their own selfish interest, their own tribal perspective, and you're either with me or you're against me. You're either with Trump or you're against the world. And that, to me, Juan, is why this is such an uncomfortable period. I mean, I get people all the time, you know, saying, oh, you know, why are you still a Republican? You should leave the party and all this. And I'm like, look, I've been in this fight my whole life. I had to deal with a whole bunch of stuff that Donald Trump would have no clue about. And so along the way, I've had the good fortune to be able to define my conservatism and my republicanism around the ideals and goals that Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, together with those band of individuals who formed this party in the 1850s, and with the idea of starting with individual rights and liberties. And so what I see now is something that looks at those things as the Voting Rights Act sits in the desk drawer of the Speaker of the House, and there's no movement by my party that once was not just the arc, you know, the folks who out there argued for voting rights, but were the architects of the legislation. You know,
in fact, let me just interject here, Michael. In the book, in What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights, I tell the story of Everett Dirksen.
Yes.
Dirksen, a Republican senator from Illinois and from southern Illinois, Pekin, Illinois, what they call a sundown town. If you're black, you don't want your ass in there after sundown.
That's right.
And he's the man relied on by the Democrats, President Johnson, to push for passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Guess why Johnson had to rely on him? Because the Southern Democrats, the Dixiecrats, were opposed to it. They were segregationists. They didn't want a Civil Rights Act that had any power and punch behind it.
Right, right.
They didn't want that at all. So what happened was he went to Dirksen, and Dirksen worked with the president and got together sufficient Republican votes to push it over the finish line. No Civil Rights Act of 1964 without those Republican votes, led by a Republican and a strongly conservative Republican, Everett Dirksen.
Yeah, and again, that's where the party was once anchored, and it, 'cause it understood the power of those individual rights and liberties protected under the Constitution. We now want to use that same Constitution to protect our own particular self-interests. And that, to me, is dangerous for this country. It just is. Staying on this idea of danger for, you know, the period that we find ourselves in right now, when you look at some of the movements that have emerged over the last couple of years, some begun at the end of the Obama administration, others under Trump. And I'm thinking not just Me Too, but Black Lives Matter and things like that. How relevant do you see them, particularly as you sort of walk through this idea in your book of What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? How relevant are these books, are these movements? And what does that say as we look over the next few weeks and months leading up to and certainly post the fall elections? What does it say about where we go next and how we get there?
Well, I mean, for me, what you see is that there's an effort by Trump and I think for his supporters to say the Black Lives Matter movement is just some far left fringe radical movement. You know, Trump makes a big effort, and again, this is what I try to do in the book. Let's get beyond the kind of daily Twitter storm or the latest controversy for cable news. Let's look at what Trump's actually doing. So when it comes to something like Black Lives Matter, remember, the key here is trying to repair the relationship between police and poor black communities. That requires what Right. are called consent decrees. What has the Trump administration done? Oh, they said, we don't want any part of these consent decrees. We're not encouraging them. We're not signing on to them. Oh, my gosh. So you get local police chiefs in Baltimore and elsewhere saying, no, we want these consent decrees. We see these as a necessary step to help build relationships, bridges between communities that need policing, their citizens too, and the police department. The Trump administration has pulled back. Well, how about criminal justice reform? Before Trump showed up, there was a significant slice of the Republican caucus in the Senate working with the Obama Justice Department on reducing the number of people in jail for nonviolent drug offenses, Michael.
Yeah.
Well, guess what happens? Trump comes in, that's all gone.
That's all gone.
They're not doing it anymore.
No.
So this is the substance. We can talk about Black Lives Matter, but slow down. You look at this and the fight that Trump says nasty things about black folks and them and all the rest, but the substance of what he's doing is going under the radar and escaping the notice of people that he is damaging the black community.
That, to me, is why, again, going to this idea of the dangerous period that we're in, you look at some of the actions taken by and coming out of the Justice Department right now, and how it undermines the civil liberties, the rights for a lot of citizens, but particularly the citizens of color. When you consider the approach taken on very basic things like voting rights, it does sort of slam up in your face when he asked the question and you answered it appropriately in the book. What do you have to lose? Well, quite a lot. And I think that you just cited an example of why there is a lot at stake and a lot to lose here. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen longer term, but I know shorter term, people do need to wake up and people do need to pay attention and realize that those bright shining objects that we get caught up in every day, those storylines, the stories within the stories, it's like a dramatized series, you know, serial. Every week, every day, there's a new episode that you're sort of tuned into. We need to tune out of that and focus on, like you said, the substance of what's going on beneath the surface, because that, folks, whether it is 2 years from now or 6 years from now, that's when you're going to feel the impact of what's been happening. When you wake up one morning you realize,
you know, we just went through the Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's hearing. You know, you stop and think about, so who did Trump put on the high court? And you think, oh, so I get it. You get two guys, neither of whom is going to support voting rights in this country.
No.
Neither of whom has anything good to say about immigration in this country in terms of their record on the courts, in terms of their opinions and decisions. And, of course, the last guy, Kavanaugh, may not even respect the idea of the president of the United States being subpoenaed in the course of the Russia investigation. So, you know, wow, the damage to that institution. Trump has made it a rubber stamp.
Yep.
And I think it was a total political roughhouse move, just brutal politics. I mean, remember, they kept Merrick Garland out, and now they go forward in this way. I just think, what damage is being done? So you talk about in 2 years, in what, 6 years if he gets reelected, I think we're going to see that the country has been hurt.
Well, and I think where you're going to see it is that at levels like you just referenced, at the court level, and how some of these storylines play out. Now, you know, knowing Judge Kavanaugh as I've come to know him from Catholic circles here in town and things like that, I'm still not convinced, Juan, that he's going to be this great arbiter for the demise of Roe versus Wade. I don't think he's going to come at it the way you may be right on some of the process questions with respect to presidential power and the authority to subpoena the president. But I think on some of the other big social questions, as we've already seen play out with Justice Roberts on health care, these Republicans, these last three Republicans appointed to the bench, Roberts included, I think, which is why you saw little covered as it was, Juan, a lot of conservatives were not that crazy about Roberts' appointment. And we're really,
right.
I mean, not Roberts, Kavanaugh's appointment. And we're really concerned when George Bush started pushing that nomination. So I think there's good reason for that, because I think he's going to be much more of a center right jurist than justice than you would think. But we'll see.
Boy, that would be so. That would be interesting. And again, here comes the Man of Steel, because you know him.
Yeah, so I think he's going to surprise some people in that regard, and I think there's going
to... I must tell you, though, I worry that he is so emotionally upset about having to go through the storm, Professor Ford's charges and all the rest, from what I saw East Room, that celebration, he's calling out senators by name, he's hugging and thanking Trump. I think he feels like he now knows who his friends are, and I think he's maybe in a position where he feels he has to return the loyalty.
I think that's a fair point, but here's the rub on the point you just made. I think all of that's true, and I think that's also all the more reason why he doesn't go down that road and he doesn't come off hard. I think he sits in the cut, and he tries to be a proper justice, because at the end of the day, despite everything that he went through, the one thing he's always wanted to be and he's always wanted to do is this. And it's not from as much of an ideological perspective as some would think. Yes, you know, he's been in those circles with a lot of the conservative jurisprudence and the folks over at Heritage and the folks over here and there. But I think at the end of the day, his focus and his emphasis is going to be on his two daughters. And that leads me to believe that his accounting is going to be a little bit different than I think people realize. We'll see.
I pray that you're right.
I pray that I'm right, too. But I think, you know, I don't think it'll be that way. And besides, I think the last point on that is, I think you're going to see this center hold on this court. Yes, it's a 5-4 conservative majority, but I think the Chief Justice and Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch, for that matter, they make a very interesting center, if you will, on the center right side of things. And I think they're going to surprise and disappoint some people, and not necessarily in the order you would think.
Wow. Well, this is interesting. That's why you can't miss this podcast. You can learn something.
You can learn something. Well, we learned a lot from you today, brother, and I really appreciate you taking time to stop in. This is a busy season, I know, for you, and you've got the book out. And it is, again, a great read, folks. Please pick it up. What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights. Before you get out of here, I've got an important message I want to share with you. A lot of you out there are married, have kids and a mortgage, but don't have life insurance. You think you can't afford it. Well, let me tell you about John. John is 35 and in pretty good shape. He talked to a couple of life insurance companies, but the quotes were, how should we say, outrageous. Then he called SelectQuote at 1-800-394-8967. For over 30 years, SelectQuote has been saving you money on life insurance. They comparison shop highly rated term life insurance companies and give you a choice of your best rates. SelectQuote gave John the option of a $1 million policy for under $36 a month or a $500,000 policy for under $19 a month. Quotes are free. Give him a call at 1-800-394-8967. That's 1-800-394-8967. Or go to their new easy-to-follow website, selectquote.com. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states. The one and only, the incomparable Juan Williams. It's such a joy having you on, man. I really appreciate it, talking brother to brother.
What's up? The man that tells you what's up, Michael Steele. Michael, thank you so much, bro.
You got it, man. You got it. All right, folks, that does it for this week. You know we'll be back because we love you that much, and we hope you love what we're doing here at the Man of Steel. So stick it out with us. You can, again, find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to check it out. And certainly follow me on Twitter @Michael Steele. All right, we'll catch y'all later. Out.